You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Well, fellas, it's Christmas Day for Apple nerds today. So we had the iPhone 7 event. Lots of good stuff happened. So before we get into the specifics and delve into it, what were your overall impressions of it? Good, bad, happy, sad?
I love the James Corden intro. I thought that was really cool with Tim. I was excited about the phone, excited about the watch. Even though we technically knew most of what we saw, I still left very excited.
Definitely exciting stuff. I kind of walked away with a feeling of excitement.
Yeah, same here. I think there wasn't a lot of surprises, particularly after Apple messed up and tweeted the big surprise before it happened. All the specs on the phone, all in one concise tweet. It was nuts. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I was, you know, as we're sitting there watching the live stream, I'm following on Twitter, and people started talking about things like, oh, this is definitely the way things are. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, well, how can they possibly know that? I mean, we haven't gotten that far yet. And then, of course, we saw that that Apple had accidentally tweeted the big surprises for everything. So I'm sure that was somebody's first and last tweet, particularly since the Twitter account for Apple was pretty new. This is the first time in recent memory that, well, I mean, they've had an Apple support, they've had some iTunes stuff, but they'd never had an official Apple Twitter account, and it looks like they goofed. So before we get into that, though, you know, we started off, as you said, with James Corden doing the carpool karaoke with Tim and Pharrell, and I thought that was pretty cool since they had bought the rights to carpool karaoke. So we're going to see some Apple Music episodes for that, so that's going to be pretty neat. Didn't really care for Tim Cook's musical choice. I mean, One Republic?
I'm not a big fan of One Republic. You know, it could have been maybe a more universally known song, but, you know, that's one of those bands that everyone from age 25 on is going to know anyway. I'm just the one old guy in the United States that expects it to be something more well known, even if it were, you know, the Beatles or U2 or somebody other than the poppy band you would hear on the local pop station.
Poor choice, but what can you say? I mean, he's one of the richest men in the world.
At least they worked in the Southern National Anthem there, so we had some Skynyrd. So Sweet Home Alabama, can't go wrong with that.
Too bad it wasn't Freebird, I guess.
That would have been great if it just used 20 minutes out of that 2 hours just for the extended version of Freebird.
I was going to say that would have been a really long intro.
Have Cook playing air guitar solo the entire time.
So, of course, something interesting to come out of that, speaking of music, is that they've got 17 million users on Apple Music, and they've added 2 million in the last, 3 months? They had 15 million in the first year, so not bad. I mean, still not Spotify numbers, but it's getting up there, and that's pretty cool to not have a free tier.
So when they say that many, that 17 million, that's paid subscriptions.
Yep, since they don't do free, which, you know, that significantly pads Spotify's numbers quite a bit, so I would be surprised at how many more paying customers Spotify has over Apple Music at this point.
Does Spotify not release the numbers for paid versus free?
I got to do some Googling. I think they do, but I'm not entirely certain. But we'll check on that. We'll put that in the show notes. The iTunes concert that happens every September, we had heard that was going to be a for-pay-only concert now with Apple Music subscribers getting to see it, but it appears that it's going to be free for everyone, according to what Tim Cook said on stage.
Not a big deal to me. I've never really paid that much attention to the iTunes concerts in the past.
Once the Apple TV came around and they had it, I would tune into that every once in a while, just because it's kind of neat. They usually have really big names and just worth checking out. I think Elton John's on there this year, and I think Britney Spears, and I don't know. It seems like a weird eclectic mix they have. Jim, you're a music fan. What saith you?
I watched a few of the shows last year after the fact. Nothing live. I don't recall. Maybe Disclosure. I might have watched Disclosure live, but otherwise, I don't remember watching any of them live last year. I do think it's good that they'll let anybody watch this year instead of just making people have Apple Music to watch those. I don't think it really, it's not going to make a big difference to Apple's bottom line if they do it either way. So
no, and it's a good commercial to draw people in who might have been sitting on the fence, I think. So But the big news too, they delved right into the App Store, 140 billion app downloads from the App Store, and they've generated over twice the revenue of the Android App Store. So really not a surprise that it's kind of the first platform for those that want to be able to monetize. Right out of the gate, we have Mario coming to iOS. So Nintendo making a big splash. That's really cool. What do you guys think about Super Mario showing up on iOS?
I thought the lead up to it was exciting because they said, well, we've had this one and we've had this one and now we've got somebody coming that we've never had before. And in my head, I just said to myself, oh, it's got to be Mario. And then they show the app icon or just Mario's head sort of fade into the presentation.
Yeah, same here. I was like, okay, it's got to be Mario. And it's funny because the app is already showing up in the App Store that you can click on it and for it to notify you when it launches. So it's already being listed in the App Store, even though it's not available yet. And I can't be the first person who, when they heard the game name was Super Mario Run, to think of Pokemon Go and to think they were going to copy some sort of Pokemon, the mechanic from Pokemon and then the previous game from Niantic to make some game that was like that. But thankfully, they made a real Mario game that we can play on iPhone and iPad. So yes, I'm very excited for that. And once the price comes out, I know they said it was going to be a one-time pay app, which I think is great news. And hopefully, I mean, I hope it's a little bit higher. You know, make it $19.99 or $14.99. I mean, I think $19 is about as high as they can go, but maybe they go a little higher. I don't know. But I think you try to make it a little higher to where, you know, to show that you can make a good game and charge for it on iOS and people will buy it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the in-app purchases have, you know, they're really popular and the ad-supported games are really popular, but I like to buy something and own it. And it seems really weird to me that that methodology still works on the Mac, but doesn't work on mobile at all. And I know the ages of people who are doing it. That's what seems to be the problem. There's an entire generation that's brought up on thinking everything is free and you don't have to pay for anything, which is kind of a shame. But I'm thinking $10 is probably where it would top out. I would pay $20 for Super Mario, but that's, you know, that's just me. But I had to feel when they were bringing it that they were going to go with something that was a little more classic. There was a game a few years ago, and I'm not a big 3DS or some of those Nintendo portable systems. I never really got into them. But they had like, what is a Super Mario Paper type thing a few years ago was a game. And I remember seeing it in the store and thinking, why do they do something like this? Why not just stick with what works? People would love it. And this clearly shows that they had that in mind. Like, we're going to give people what they want. This is going to be like something, you know, that people have been clamoring for. They could have taken the original Super Mario Brothers and brought it to iOS, and I think it would have done just fine.
I agree.
I kind of hope to see the Super Mario All-Stars where you could have Super Mario 1, 2, and 3 all in one package. But I'm not disappointed that it was the Super Mario Run, and because it's still the classic side-scrolling Mario type paradigm, if you will.
I agree with you, Brian. They could have just brought the original Super Mario Brothers, and I would have been so excited to be able to play it on my phone. This looks similar enough to that, but with, you know, some modern touches for the interface that we're working with now. So I'm excited. I can't wait.
So they did something. They have Mario stickers for iMessage. It looked pretty cool. And what was the? I missed the Toad Rally Battle Mode. Was that that's something you were paying attention to there, Brad? Right.
Yeah, you can team up with someone else who owns the game and you see sort of a ghosted avatar of the other person. So you can actually sort of run side by side with the other person who may be playing it. You basically run until the time runs out. So you see who gets further inside of the time constraint. And then as you do well with what, you know, picking up so many coins or whatever, you get these toad points or these toad thumbs up, and whenever you finish, whoever gets the most toads wins.
Interesting. You know, I want to see Super Mario Kart make it to iOS, because that would be really, really cool. A lot of hours wasted in college playing that. Did you guys ever play that?
I did. A lot.
I played a good bit of Mario Kart. It's a little bit later than college for me. My college days were more of the Tecmo Bowl and that sort of playing. But yeah, I've played a good bit.
I just remember it being a lot of fun because you could sort of troll your other friends and, you know, throw out the shell or the banana peel.
Were you guys as surprised as I was to see that iWork was featured prominently? That was kind of surprising, right?
It seemed like a lot of time for iWork, just me. I just don't see that many people using it. It seems to me like people are either Google app users or Microsoft Office users. I mean, are there really that many iWork users out there? I mean, maybe they're trying to get that. You know, maybe they're trying to stab back at Microsoft for the ads that Microsoft is running, and that, you know, if they could steal some thunder from Office. I just thought it was a little too much time.
I mean, I think my wife has Office installed on her Mac, but she pretty much uses Pages and Keynote exclusively. She's never been much of a spreadsheet person, so I can't say that she uses Numbers or Excel, but I definitely know that she uses Keynote pretty much weekly for doing her presentations that she does, or what she calls talks at work. She works at a teaching hospital, so she's always having to do clinical-type presentations to medical students. Medicine students, whatever you want to call them, doctors, and that's what she uses solely is Keynote.
I kind of felt like Hansel and Zoolander when they were talking about it, sort of like when they were talking about Sting's music in the original Zoolander. I don't really know much about it, but I'm glad he's making it. That's kind of the way I felt about iWork. Was I never use it really, but I'm, you know, it's kind of cool. There's a free Office suite and it does so much. I mean, I've been using Office for so long and I have the subscription and it does so much that it solves a problem that I don't really have. I mean, I'm glad that they have the real-time collaboration, but I don't know, just didn't do much for me. I was really kind of surprised that it got any mention at all, to be quite honest. I do hope that the nerds that I listen to, the other Apple podcasts that are constantly complaining about Google Docs not supporting the features of the iPad, would actually stop using it and start using the Home Teams product, since it supports real-time collaboration, but maybe that's just me. So let's talk about Apple Watch. So the Apple Series 2 is what the official name is. It was kind of surprising to me to see that in 2015, they were only available for 8 months, but they became the number two watch brand in the world, but yet they still didn't release any sales numbers, which I thought was kind of weird. If you're going to make a claim like that, don't you think you should have to put the number of units sold? I mean, that seems kind of important, right?
I guess just because everybody wears a watch, or you know, everybody over 30 wears a watch, they showed that column of the Apple Watch moving up over the other brands. Maybe they feel like they didn't have to show you any real numbers.
Well, if you saw, the top brand was still Rolex, which to me, Rolexes are very expensive, and I know they sell a lot of them, but it can't be, you know, it's not like Ford cars, you know, they're not selling that many Rolexes. So I think the world market for watches is just small. So why release the number? You know, if you can just put yourself at number two, then that's saying enough.
Well, I suppose you have a point too. And they weren't talking just about smartwatches either. That was, you know, all watches worldwide. So that's kind of interesting, I think.
I've just started seeing other smartwatches besides Apple Watches in the wild now. Like when I'm at work, every now and then I'll notice somebody else with a smartwatch, and it'll be one of the Android ones. And up until very recently, I don't think I ever noticed any of them. And now I have started seeing them from here to there, but it's still not like Apple Watches.
Same here. In the last year and change that I've been wearing an Apple Watch, I've been kind of, you know, I travel a lot too, and I keep an eye out for those types of things. And more often than not, it was either a nice watch or an Apple Watch. It wasn't, yeah, I didn't really see much in the way of Android smartwatches. Now, every now and again, I'll see them, that characteristic big hubcap shape will pop up, but it's still kind of a rare thing. I mean, it's rare to see a smartwatch in the wild for the most part, but you'll still see them. I still see far more Apple Watches than I see Android watches out there.
Maybe it's just because I'm still in Mississippi and it's just not as prevalent. I either see traditional watches or a Fitbit type device, just a exercise type device, or Apple Watch. I haven't seen any Android based watches anywhere.
Yeah, I imagine it's not very common. I mean, you have to think most people that are buying into a smartwatch are trying to stay with the ecosystem. And I think it's why we see a lot more of the Apple watches than the Android watches, I think. I mean, just a lot of the people that I know that go Android go because of the price point of, hey, I can get a cheap phone and I don't really care about it. And those aren't the ones that are normally going to jump and get a smartwatch. So I think that's probably that probably has something to do with it. So, not content to let Nintendo have all the fun, we saw that Pokemon Go is coming to the Watch. So, Jim, you gotta have an opinion on that.
Sounds great to me. It's just something else that that, you know, I've already got a watch. If I didn't have one, I'd probably have to get one now. But yeah, I mean, exactly what they said in the, I want to call it a keynote, but the event, that it should keep you from having to look down at your phone, which would be nice. But you still have to have Pokemon running in the background while you're walking around. So it's not like we're going to save that much battery for that. So we'll see. We'll see how it all works out.
It just seems like it makes the interaction of it that much more accessible.
Right. I mean, it's right there on your wrist, and we can see how it's gonna go. And they also said, you know, it'd be before the end of the year that comes out. So I think that's probably still a ways, you know, before we actually see it. But it'll be nice when it happens.
So now you can kill your Apple Watch battery in the same way that you kill your phone battery.
Oh, I didn't consider that. Ugh. Yeah.
You'll have an anchor battery pack hanging off your wrist attached to your watch.
Just have one of those solar panel charger things just put onto your back and then just leave the phone somehow strapped to the power supply to your wrist. I think that would probably just be easier.
Yeah, that's it. Backpack with solar panels built in, and I could just have Pokemon Go stickers on it too. That'd be great.
You're gonna have a Ghostbuster Proton pack on your back to power your devices.
We'll see a new watch case with, you know, the satellite wings hanging off of it.
So the Apple Watch Series 2, it was splash proof. Now it's swim proof. And the calorie counting they've done is a lot more accurate. They were even going so far as to test the lactic acid content in blood. And the thing that was kind of cool to me, I think the speaker, which is, I guess, the only ingress for water on the device, now acts as a sonic water impeller, so it pushes water out. What do you think about that?
That was pretty cool when they showed it, the demo or the example of it on the presentation.
Yeah, it demos well. You know, it seems like a really, you know, some engineer was really smart and came up with that, and hey, let's show it off. So it's one of those kind of whiz-bang things with the waterproof watch.
I know swimmers are going to love being able to swim. I guess you could do it before, but since it was splash proof, a lot of people didn't want to. But now I guess they said they simulated swimming 7 days a week, 24 hours a day for like 2 months with a watch, and it lasted just fine. So,
and it didn't get all wrinkled like your fingertips.
Yeah, this weekend I was at a theme park on Sunday, and I was getting on a water ride, and I was just standing in line, and I kind of looked down and realized, hey, I didn't take my watch off. You know, I put my phone away, and so I real quick took my watch off and shoved it where I had my phone, which was inside my shoe, inside a plastic bag, inside a backpack, so none of it would get wet. But you know, you just didn't know how wet you were going to get, so the watch went where the phone was.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've kept mine on before when I was doing some canoeing. I guess when the phone first came out. Did very good not to get my arm wet until the very end, until my wife nearly flipped a boat and I had to catch myself in shallow water. He was my left arm, and I was like, man, but you know, everything was fine. But this one is water resistant to 50 meters, so that's pretty cool. What was really impressive was the system on a chip, or they're calling it, I guess, a SIP is what they're referring to it as. So we have 2 times the CPU speed, 2 times the graphics. You got the dual core CPU, new GPU. The astronomy app they demoed was actually pretty neat. Something I think I would like to use. I was trying to think, why would you need that, right? Historically, for what we've seen on the watch, graphics haven't really been a concern in terms of being able to, hey, I'm going to tax the ability, because what are you going to do on it, right? I mean, you're going to have a picture as a background. You're not really going to have anything. You're not going to be playing a console-level game on the watch. So I thought that was kind of strange. Are there any use cases beyond that astronomy app that you guys can think of?
Yeah, I guess if the doctor wanted to see some crazy detailed MRI pictures or something there on their wrist, like, you know, they could do that at 60 FPS.
It could also be for when you're running apps, now that you would actually use it maybe without your phone, if you're out running or doing something that you don't have your phone with you, you know, now the phone or the watch can pull some of that for you instead of having to have your phone. And if you're going to have more advanced games like a Pokemon Go to be able to do stuff on the watch, then you want to be able to actually have the watch power that and not try to be sending it from the phone or things like that.
Yeah, that's a good point, I suppose. I did like the fact that it had a much brighter display. So they said it was the brightest display they've ever made. Is that, did I hear that right? They did say that, right?
On any Apple device.
One of the things I was impressed with is they didn't go full Apple and that we've got to make this thing thinner right off the bat. So it still appears to be about the same thickness. I don't guess they said if it got any thinner, but we've got faster CPU, faster graphics, more battery. It's got a GPS in there now. You've got all these things in the watch, and they actually kept, you know, put all that in there and kept it the same thickness instead of by default instantly trying to make with the second iteration the thing thinner. That to me was, you know, thank you, Apple.
Yeah, I think it says a lot about them that they didn't actually talk about, hey, it's thinner. It looks like it's the exact same size as before, which would be really strange if that were the case because they normally never do that, ever.
Yeah, they didn't go into the size at all. So to me, I definitely don't think they would make it thicker because that would be the headline tomorrow. No matter how amazing the watch is, Apple gets thicker, you know, on second iteration. That, you know, you don't do that. But if you stay the same, then all things considered, it's still, you know, it's still better.
Still follows Moore's law, you know, more transistors on the chip.
The same could be said for the battery life. They didn't mention it explicitly in the presentation, so we're being told from what we've seen on the internet that it's the same battery life as before. Which, if it's the same thickness, same battery life, I mean, you know, new CPU, new GPU, but This is probably doesn't seem that compelling of an upgrade. The GPS is nice, but I don't know. It just or maybe I'm just so used to, hey, it's a new device and it's changed in X amount of ways. This doesn't seem like that compelling of an upgrade, or at least it doesn't to me. What do you guys think?
Well, better performance through CPU and better GPU in the same amount of space with the same battery life just means that they've improved the watch OS, you know, and the all the system calls and things that they're doing. Just the fact that they've increased, you know, they've put in that GPS chipset in there and increased the system performance.
I don't know that I'll upgrade immediately, but if I do, it'll be because I wanted a stainless steel model now, because I originally bought the aluminum when they went on discount at Christmas in 2015. So I didn't pay full price for my aluminum model when I got it. So I wouldn't feel as bad about going ahead and upgrading now and going to a stainless model. So that's what I would be going to is one of those if I was going to buy a Series 2 one, which we'll see in the next coming months. We'll have to see when the new MacBook Pros come out and if I decide to go that route, you know, if I still want the watch or not.
I bought the stainless steel on launch day, and I would do it now again as well. So, you know, that I did see one of our friends on Twitter say, I'm so glad I bought the sport model now that a new one's coming out. And I'm thinking it's been like a year and a half since. And actually, if you look at the design, it was announced in September of 2014. So it's a two-year-old design. Like, I have no regrets that I bought the stainless steel. I was looking at the stainless steel now today, the Series 2. And it looks like it's priced just the same as the original, but you can buy it with the sport band. So it's not when the stainless steel came out, I think the black one I paid $1,050 I think was the going rate, or $1,100 I think. Now with the sport band on the model, it's like $549. So at the time they weren't offering the black stainless steel with anything other than the what's known as the Darth Vader bracelet, the black link bracelet. But I would probably, if I'm inclined to do it, I honestly haven't decided if I'm going to do it or not. I mean, I could go either way on it. I like it. I think watchOS 3 is going to make my current watch a lot more usable. So maybe, maybe not. I don't use the GPS functionality enough that it's a compelling purchase to me. I do most of my cardio indoors, stationary on you know, the elliptical. So I don't really, it doesn't really matter to me. Yeah, I don't know. It looks pretty cool. I thought the ceramic model, so I guess the gold edition, the $10,000 Apple Watch is no more. They didn't mention it, and I think it's been pulled from the Apple store. But the ceramic model is four times harder than stainless steel, and it only comes in white. I don't know how I feel about that. I think if they had made a black ceramic, I would have probably gotten that over the stainless steel just to see what that was like. What are your thoughts on the ceramic?
It just kind of follows the same Apple, you know, you've got the white Apple devices, the white iPhone, and all the iPhone cables are always white, and the headphones are always white. I think it just kind of follows that line. I don't really understand the point of having a ceramic model, whether it's no matter what the color is. I mean, who cares if it's four times harder than stainless? Is it cheaper than the stainless? Is it lighter than the stainless? You know, give me some other reason other than it's harder and that it's white.
So it's not cheaper. It's actually being sold as the Apple Watch edition. The ceramic one is. It's the only Apple Watch edition now from the Apple Store. And it starts at $1,249, and then the 42mm is $1,299. And that's with a sport band. So you're paying $1,299 for a sport band watch. So as a comparison, you can get the Space Black with the sport band for $600. So it's over twice the price of the stainless model. So you have to really want a white watch to pay for that.
Not just that, but from a fashion perspective, you know, things pair with black a lot easier than they pair with white. If you're going out and you're dressing nice, the black watch is a nice sort of understated thing. The white just, I don't know, it just kind of sticks out. And hey, it's after Labor Day.
You can't wear it before Easter.
Shame on you, Tim Cook. I did think that the Nike Plus model that was announced looked pretty cool. It has the aerated band that, I don't know, it kind of reminded me of Crocs. If Crocs made a watch band, and it's not bad. I like it. You know, I would still buy it, but particularly because when you work out a lot, even the sport band, if you sweat a lot, it's kind of a, I don't know, it doesn't feel that comfortable. Maybe it's just me, but even though it's sort of a weird look, I kind of liked it. I think it's a wonder that they haven't done this before. I thought they would have had something like that when the watch first came out, but it really seems like they put an emphasis on it. What did you guys think of the Nike Plus edition?
I thought the black case with the black band and then the silver case with the silver band was cool. It looks, I know it's supposed to be an aerated band because it's sporty or whatever, but it looks like polka dots to me, which just looks kind of strange.
During the event, I liked it. I was like, ooh, that's something that I might actually consider if I'm going to go Series 2. But now looking at the Apple Store, that one's only available with the aluminum case. There's not a stainless version of the Nike version. So probably not for me. I like the holes, and I liked the band until Brad just said it looked like dots. And now that I have that in my head, I'm like, well, yeah, it kind of does. But it looked cool before that.
Oh, no. Yeah, it does look kind of like polka dots. I didn't really think of that. So let's move on to the star of the show, the iPhone 7 itself. So over a billion phones sold, best-selling product of all time. I thought that was kind of interesting. Even though Android seems to have more of the market share, you can't really deny the sheer impressiveness of selling a single product line like that from a single manufacturer reaching a billion units is really kind of unprecedented, I thought. I did like the Siri integration they kept demonstrating with the apps. I really, really want that to work. I really hope it works better than it has in the past. The iPhone 7, so having the stereo speakers, having the jet black and the matte black. What are your thoughts on the two models? I can tell you right now, I think the jet black looks beautiful, but they're saying in the small print that's on Apple's site that it shows scratches and micro abrasions really, really easily. So I don't know, that might be a deal breaker for me.
Sort of like the swirl patterns you get in your clear coat on your car, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's it. Or, even in past years when you had the, they didn't really have a jet black, but even on the black iPhones before they moved to the anodized aluminum, they showed scratches a little bit easier, I think, in some cases than they do now. But I really want that jet black iPhone, but I don't want to have to put it in a case if that were the case. If I'm going to have to cover it up, why would I even have the jet black in the first case?
Well, I'm a newfound fan of the new matte things. A lot of guitar manufacturers are doing matte black finishes or just matte finishes. And satin finishes have always been a thing, but it's really become a more popular thing with guitar finishes. And then you see some of the new motorcycles and car manufacturers are releasing matte finishes. You've seen matte blue or matte black finishes on some of the new Dodge sports cars or the some of the Fords even.
So, Brian, we know you. You're going to put it in a case. So if you want the jet black, then buy the jet black. For me, I prefer matte finishes and was excited to see a true matte black phone that's, you know, a little bit darker than the space gray we've always had before. So I'm excited about that color. I think the jet black will look good, but I personally just prefer the matte. I was excited to see both of those make the stage today.
I wonder if maybe the jet black one would be more grippy, if you will, than the matte black because of the anodized surface on the matte versus the old iPhone 4 had the fake glass back, and it was sort of grippy over the anodized aluminum phones. What do you think?
I'm certainly hoping that's the case. And, you know, Jim, you're not wrong. I will definitely put it in a case just because that's what I do. But I'm kind of torn because I want a clear case, I guess, if I were going to do that. I don't know. I mean, the more you talk about it, I'm sitting on the fence between the matte and the jet black. Because if I have the jet black, I'd want to keep it out because I like the way it looks. I've never been a fan of the space gray. I always thought it looked kind of lame and sort of an ash colored rather than, you know, it's not black. It should just be called gray because that's kind of what it is. But I really do like that jet black finish. I really wish I could just see it in the store and maybe I would do that. Maybe I'll put in the pre-order for the jet black and then because that will be the harder one to get because it's only at the 128 and the 256 model for those. So we'll see. But I don't know, man. It looks like it's really, really nice. So let's talk about the home button for just a minute. So no more physical home button as we know it. So now it's going to be the Taptic Engine power, like the Apple Watch itself, its display, and the Magic Trackpad. There's going to be no click, I guess. So it's going to be like a slab of glass when the power's off. I don't know how that's going to work, considering a lot of times you've had to, historically, you've had to hold both buttons when you power cycle the phone. So if there's no feedback, that's going to be a little bit weird. I was reading one of the reviews of the people who I think it was on The Verge who did one of the hands-on units today, and they were saying that they hated it and it wasn't nice and it felt bad. It was kind of a bummer, is how they described it. But having used the Magic Trackpad and having used the same thing on the Apple Watch, I feel like I'm pretty used to it. I don't see how that could be disappointing, and I think it's kind of cool. And a lot of the failures you have on the iPhone are usually home button related, so. What do you guys think of the whole home button thing?
Yeah, I think removing the physical clickness would be a good thing because you are removing one more moving part, sort of like in solid state drives or whatever else. You're just removing one more mechanical thing that can break down.
For me, I think it's a good thing. If I'm not mistaken, two times I've returned iPhones for replacement because my home button either died or it had like a double or triple click. Like when you started to press it down, you could feel like multiple clicks, like it just wasn't working right. And so I've had phones replaced for that before. So the fact that it doesn't move now, I think I'll be okay with it. But like you said, Brian, I mean, they're saying that it just doesn't feel right. You know, it's just one of those things that I think we'll just have to get used to. It's kind of one of those things because we're going waterproof that just has to go away.
Well, after, 10 generations of phones of having a clicking phone, home button, and then they change it for this next generation of the phone, yeah, it's going to feel weird, but I can see the progression being a good thing.
People hate change. They're resistant to change. I know the Magic Trackpad, when it came out, a lot of people have bad feelings toward that. They don't like how it feels. I know in the new MacBook Pros, it has the same thing where or maybe not the MacBook Pro, I think the MacBook Pro has it. I know the new 12-inch MacBook has it, where if the computer is powered off, then it's a slab of glass for the trackpad. There's no push. It's all simulated. After a day or two, you get used to it, and it's fine. And I actually still have a Magic Trackpad 1 at work. And I don't know. I prefer the 2. I've been using it for so long at home that it's such a non-issue. I kind of like it. I know on the watch, I've always liked it. And the phone button is supposed to be able to tell the difference between a tap and a push, which, most of us who've been running iOS 9, how many times have I invoked Apple Pay when I was just trying to invoke Siri or something like that, or just trying to see what time it was? I'll be glad if that never happens again. And I know they were fixing that in software in iOS 10. So it's water resistant, not waterproof. I guess we're not going to see any commercials with Lil Wayne walking around with a bottle of champagne pouring on it. But it's water resistant, just like the first gen Apple Watch was. So that looks pretty neat. What else do we have? The camera, I guess, as with every year, is a big deal. The optical image stabilization, the wider aperture, the six element lens. The camera looks really, really nice. I guess the rear facing camera is 12 megapixels and the front facing is 7. How crazy is that?
Yeah, 7-megapixel FaceTime camera is a really high-res stuff. I remember when they first put the forward-facing camera on the iPhone, and there was such a distinct difference between the resolution and the photos it took. And now it seems like it's going to be almost unnoticeable to your eyes, at least.
The camera is one of the pieces that I was most excited about today, and I'm usually not like that, but the camera on the 7 Plus really has me thinking, do I want to go plus again? I don't like the size. It doesn't fit my hands very well. But the extra screen just for my I'm getting older eyes and that camera have really got me sitting 50-50 on the fence now whether I want to go plus or just 7, which I never thought I would consider going back. And now here I am.
Yeah, I was a 6 Plus user, and you know, as much as I mocked the phablets for as long as I did, as soon as Apple made one, I was like, you know what, I'm going to be a complete hypocrite and go out and get one. And you know, the only thing that I didn't like was the way it felt in the pockets. It was kind of unwieldy. And yeah, it's, you know, even though it doesn't fit as well, I have kind of big hands, I can normally deal with it. It's still kind of ungainly, and it never worked with that one-handed fashion to which we're all accustomed. So that was kind of annoying. I will say that I love the 1080p screen on it. There were times when I would be flying and I would leave my iPad in my backpack and just watch things on the phone, and it was good enough. So, you know, I was one of those people too. I went from a 6 Plus to a 6S, and I really loved having something that fits in a pocket better. But I'm telling you, the ability to have those dual cameras. So it's going to have the two 12-megapixel cameras. It does the one of them's wide angle. The other one's telephoto. Has that the feature, what is it, bokeh? Is that how it's pronounced, I guess?
It's called bokeh.
Yeah, so you can do the changing of the focus. It looks really nifty. And, you know, my wife and I, we take a lot of pictures. We visit family a lot. Lots of nieces and nephews, lots of vacations, other things that we do. So having a great camera is going to be, you know, I always like having that. The image signal processor doing 100 billion operations on every picture in 25 milliseconds is nuts.
I want to know who's counting that high that quickly for them, because that just seems kind of crazy. But again, I mean, that what I just said is the camera usually doesn't excite me. And this one, the possibilities with the two lenses has really got me sitting on the fence about whether I want to go plus model or not. So very excited about the camera either way. But that second lens really is a game changer.
If you look at the events every year and what they spend the most time on, you would swear that Apple was in the camera business, and it just happens to also double as a computer.
Yeah, they always spend the most time on the camera. I mean, Phil usually has the most stage time.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like even in past years, it's always been like that. They always show off the camera above all other things. So every year, it kind of makes me excited. It still blows my mind when I'm around people and they don't use the features that are built into the camera even today. Like burst mode, you know, you take pictures of kids, you take pictures of animals, you take pictures of people doing things that happen really fast or unpredictably. Being able to use burst mode is a godsend to be able to get good shots out of things where you can't stage a shot. And nobody I know ever uses it. It's really, really weird unless they do it accidentally. So some of these things, unless they make them intuitive, it probably won't be a compelling thing for a lot of people. But I think it's really cool. It is sort of weird that the telephoto functionality is not going to be available at launch. So an iOS update is going to bring it. And it's kind of disappointing that most of that work seems to be done at the software layer. But the fact that you can do a 10x zoom and it's supposed to look really, really good, it's kind of mind-blowing to me that we've got that. Because zooming in on an iPhone, typically, no matter what the model, has always been sort of hit or miss, and it's usually miss. Photography, a big thing for you guys. I mean, I know, Jim, you're looking at going plus just for that factor. But what about your own photography needs for the phone? Do you guys mostly use DSLRs? Do you like your iPhone camera the way that it is? How does this affect you?
A couple of years ago, AT&T came out and did some trench work, and they drilled through our sewage line, the exit pipe on our house. And I got out there with my daughter's DSLR and to take some pictures to send to the folks that do the investigative work to basically pay you back when you file a claim like that. And I definitely couldn't have ever done that with my phone, but that's something you could definitely do now. I mean, I'm not saying it's a 100% replacement, but for somebody like me, who would only use a DSLR for something that needs high detail, I mean, you just about could replace the DSLR with the new iPhone camera.
I have a point and shoot that's in a drawer here somewhere that has a really good optical zoom on it. It's a Panasonic point and shoot that's probably 3 years, maybe 4 years old at this point. So it was nice when I bought it. I don't even know where it's at. So my phone is my camera and I use it, you know, exclusively. So being able to do that with the 7 Plus is definitely something that that will be nice.
Very, very interesting. I totally agree. So the Retina HD display, the best display on any smartphone, they claim 25% brighter, the wide color gamut, the cinema standard, color management, 3D touch, the whole deal. I guess that's cool, but, you know, for the most part, I've never found the displays, the display is very lacking in the way that they've been in the past. What about you?
I don't think any of that's necessarily stuff that you can see with your naked eye. If you're looking at some serious photos or doing something like that, then maybe the brightness will be nice when you're outside in the daylight. That'd be something that you could notice. But other than that, I'm not sure about the color gamut or that sort of thing, if you'd be able to tell anything.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room. So the headphone jack was confirmed removed. And I guess Phil Schiller used the word courage. It takes courage to remove, you know, to do the things that we do. And they were getting beat up pretty bad on Twitter about that. But I don't think that he's wrong. I think that to some extent, there it does take courage. They take the arrows first, but everyone else falls in line after the fact. So every time they've ever removed technology, this, you know, they always seem to catch grief for it. But everyone else seems to do the same thing in pretty record time. I mean, you're removing technology that's been around since 1878. I mean, if you think about that, there's no other piece of technology on the phone that's been that old. So moving everything to Lightning, I guess, is kind of a cool move. But in a very uncharacteristic Apple move, the dongle for the speakers and for headphones are actually in the box. They aren't charging you extra, which is a very un-Apple-like move. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's really cool. You know, they're just trying not to alienate the people who are the diehard wired headphone users. And I think it's a really cool thing that they've done, including the dongle in the box.
I agree. I was pretty surprised the dongle was going to be in the box. But, you know, it's a good move by Apple. And again, I think I've said it on past podcasts. I think they're the ones who leaked a year ago that the port was going away, just so we would have a whole year of people talking about it. So today wouldn't have been such a shock that thing is going away, that, you know, we've all spent so much money on wired headphones and we have all these wired headphones all over the place that, you know, they're making obsolete, which, you know, and they're not. And then they're also putting the dongle in the box. So the difference there is, you know, if you wanted to charge your phone like on an external battery and listen to wired headphones now, I'm guessing you can't do that. The dongle doesn't have a side plug for charging, if I remember correct today. So like a lot of times if I'm sitting on an airplane, I'm listening to my Bose headphones, which are wired. And I also have my phone plugged into a external battery. So if I was doing that, I would not be able to do that in the future, where I was listening and charging at the same time. But, you know, they definitely didn't bring that up.
Yeah, that seemed like a curious omission to me, too. I think a lot of people who use wired headphones are also charging at the same time. Being on a plane is the perfect use case there. And I thought that omission was curious, to say the least. You have to have a scenario where you handle that, unless, you know, they really don't. Maybe they're doing this as a passive aggressive way to make sure that you don't use the wired earphones, you know, for very long after that. I can only assume that's the case, because if you look at a lot of the dongles they offer, the HDMI one, for example, the USB, they also have a Lightning pass-through port on all of those. So it seems really strange they wouldn't have done that here. I really wish they had done that if they're going to go ahead. But at least including the dongle, it does give you a transitory step. They didn't charge you $20 or $30 for it like everyone expected. But those AirPods, wow. It looks like that W1 chip. So they make their own chip now, the W1. And in the demo, they detect when they're in your ear. There's one step setup. They do beamforming for the microphone. They have the accelerometers that let you access Siri with a double tap. It instantly switch between devices. They've overcome a lot of the problems that Bluetooth has. But, of course, this isn't Bluetooth. It doesn't appear to be. So I'm not really sure that I like the fact that Apple has a proprietary standard for wireless. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I do like that my all of my Bluetooth devices are sort of universal between my different devices that I would need to use them on. So I don't really like that I won't be able to use my new AirPods with, you know, some other non-Apple branded thing. Although most of everything I own is Apple, but there might be some use case where I couldn't do it, you know, and, you know, there is that one what if, you know, scenario.
The hard plastic pods that Apple uses for its previous headphones and now these just don't fit my ears well. They're uncomfortable. So the AirPods are never anything that I was going to buy myself. I like earbuds that have removable plastic tips where you can put smaller, larger tips on there that fit better in your ears versus this one size fit all thing that definitely doesn't fit me. Hopefully they'll license that connection technology out for other people to use besides themselves. But I don't think that'll happen, but it would be nice if they did.
I completely disagree. I think that absolutely will happen because you look at Lightning, it's a standard. I can go to Amazon and I can buy Lightning cables that Apple doesn't make. So I'd be shocked if they don't end up licensing this technology. That's still going to make a lot of the people who hate Apple hate them even more, though, because, again, they invented this standard, I guess, that's going to work on their devices. But you can't really fault them for wanting to control the ecosystem. And it's not like Bluetooth was that great.
Well, they seem to go out of their way to say to not say that it was Bluetooth.
Are we sure that this is not Bluetooth? Or did they confirm that this is not a Bluetooth connection between those speakers?
Yeah, that was sort of the reading between the lines. And one of the when the live blogs were happening, and I think The Verge had put up something like, "Oh, this is Bluetooth," and then I hit reload, and that was completely omitted from it. You know, maybe I'm going to be proven wrong on that in the next few days. Maybe it is, but since it doesn't suffer from the same sort of pairing issues that we've seen in the past with Bluetooth, then I am guessing this is not the case.
It's Bluetooth. I just pulled it up on the Apple Store, and under connections, it's got AirPods, Bluetooth, charging case, Lightning connector. So it says Bluetooth. So whatever they're trying to do with Bluetooth 4.0 or something like that, it doesn't get that much detail with them, but it does say Bluetooth. So we'll see.
Oh, cool. Okay, cool. You can actually use them on other devices then. So nifty. So I wonder what getting rid of the pairing that they're doing the one step and not having to enter the code, not doing the other stuff, being able to move from device to device. I guess they're handling that completely at the software level within the protocol. Strange.
Could be NFC type connection between the pods and the phone, and then you just have the Bluetooth kicking in. And after that,
I definitely agree with you on the way that they fit in the ear. So yeah, when I was looking at those, like, yeah, this is going to fall out totally. I don't know. As far as over the counter type of just off the shelf earbuds go, I've never had a problem with the Apple ones. They, particularly when they move to sort of the ergonomic model, I have strange ears as well, I guess, because I like the adjustable tips on the sport bands and those types of things. I've never really wanted the Apple ones to be that tight within the ear, so I don't know. It'll probably be fine. I agree with you though. Normally the smaller tips are the way to go. The Beats in-ear, I guess, the earbuds that they announced as well that'll be coming, the over-the-ear headphones. Those are kind of nifty too, I guess, if you have a scenario for those. Since they're still using Bluetooth, I do hope that there's some compensation when you're watching a video that you don't have to make a delay. That's my biggest gripe with Bluetooth so far, is if you're watching a video and you're not in the iTunes player, you have to adjust for like up to a half second delay. If they could figure that out, I would be on board with this completely.
I wouldn't buy a pair of Beats just out of personal, just... No, I'm not going to buy a pair of Beats. Maybe they're going to eventually get them to sound better for what they cost. But to me, I'll stick with my wired ones. I've got some Bluetooth wireless now, so we'll just use those and see what comes up next.
The last pair of Bluetooth ones that I bought were the Trex Titanium, the made by Aftershocks. It's kind of strange they have three names, but they've been the best Bluetooth headphones I've ever bought, and they don't stick in my ear. I don't have to worry about weird, uncomfortable things with them being in my ears or falling out. They just hook over the top of my ears. They sit right on my cheek, so I don't have to worry about any kind of weird, uncomfortable feeling of ear fatigue. So they've been great. So I probably won't switch off of those for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Beats either. If I were going to spend that much on headphones, I'd probably just go Bose or something to that effect. So from a processor perspective, they have the A10 that has a 4-core CPU with 3.3 billion transistors. Two high-performance cores. It's 40% faster than the A9. 6-core graphics, 50% faster than last year. Every time that they do a demo and they show something, it looks like console-level gaming, I think, this is about as good as it's going to get. And every year they seem to top it. But I think the thing that got my attention wasn't the silly little Oz game they demoed. It was kind of the offhand comment that Adobe Lightroom on A10 has 90% of the features of raw editing as it does on a Mac. That is that's kind of crazy.
It's sort of having the PlayStation in your pocket.
So it just makes me want to think about, so how long until we get one of these A processors in a Mac instead of Intel chips? It's got to be. I bet there's some Mac inside the Apple Conclave running on an A10, A11, 12, whatever chip that they're working on right now. They may never hit the public, but they're there right now and they're running on it somewhere. Somebody's testing that.
Or some new niche Mac model that would be A10 or A something based versus Intel.
I think the ultimate goal, and I'm sure both of those things are not without not without possibility. I think they want to see the iPad and the iPhone get to the point where the Mac becomes unnecessary. I think would probably be the thing that would make them happiest. Not have to change the architecture at all, just have it slowly kind of die off when the iPad and the iPhone can do everything that the Mac can do.
You just have a 34-inch touchscreen iPad, and you just happen to have a smart keyboard for it.
Yeah, and there's always going to be old people like us, but I like to think of people that are younger than us coming up that are a complete generation removed who have grown up completely on a touchscreen interface. I just don't see them. I don't see them buying computers on their own as they get older. They may be forced to use it at work. They may have to use one at work, but there may not be a use case for the average computing user that's coming up now to even get a desktop computer. What are they going to do with it?
I can't imagine not ever needing a desktop-style computer, though, because there's those times when I really do need that larger screen. No matter how good the resolution gets on the iPad, and I still need a mouse, and I still need to be able to drag with something that's a little more sensitive or a little more controllable or more exacting than my fingertip.
Sure, and for us, even podcasting is something with the way that we're doing this and the way that we have it set up that we couldn't exactly pull it off on a completely iOS only setup. But for average people, I could totally see that. If you grew up and the only thing you were doing was playing the occasional games, doing the occasional word processing in like Office or Pages or something like that, I don't know. I could see as people get older people that are far younger than us, right? We're old guys at this point. We're used to it. We're not going to change. We hate change. But I could definitely see that. But even things like, Lightroom having 90% of the features of raw editing that a Mac has. I mean, when you get to the point, right now I can use Pixelmator on an iPhone sitting in a waiting room playing with photos, and I can do most of what I would do from a desktop, even though I kind of prefer the big screen and some of the fine tuning that I can do. Most of what I want to do is there. I can assume that if I could do the same thing with Lightroom, I probably wouldn't need to be on my Mac. I don't know. It's an interesting way to think, but I don't think that they're probably going to change that architecture. I think at some point iOS is just going to make Mac OS irrelevant. But who can say? We'll see soon enough. So the battery life, 14, 15 hours. On LTE, it's 12 or 13. Not really. We'll see if that actually ends up being true. Finally, the 16-gig iPhone, it died today along with the headphone jack. So that's nice, 32, 128, and 256. No sooner than I get that announcement, I'm texting some friends, and they're like, man, I wish 64 was the base model. It's like, man, there's no pleasing some people.
Well, it was a long time coming, killing off the 16-gig model. It's just, it was time, and I'm glad to see that, you know, the 32 gig is the base model. It's really enough for most people. I don't see a 64 gig model needing to be a base model for probably a long time, at least 2 more years.
Yeah, I agree. I think 32 is fine. It's a good sweet spot for Apple. It's much better than giving people 16. And the fact that the 128 bumps into the second level, and then we have the new 256s on the third, I think this is the first time, you know, I could, in a number of years, I could say it. I think they've actually got it right this time with the 32, 128, 256. And I don't even know if I'll go 256 or not. We'll see. It's probably only a couple of bucks difference if I go with the Apple plan to pay for through them. So if it's only $3 or $4 a month, then I would go ahead and do 256 over 128 just because it's a trivial amount.
I think I'll definitely do 256 on that for the same reason I'll be doing the payment plan through Apple where you're leasing the phone. So I figure why not? If you give me enough space, I will use it for something. So, and again, as you record more video and you have, I mean, I've seldom been able to fill up the 128, but you know, we'll see, you know, challenge accepted. I'll give it a shot and see if I can do it. I think the 7 Plus was $32 a month on the Apple leasing program. So, maybe I'll end up doing that. It's worth noting they extended that program to the UK and China as well. So day one, they'll get to use it. That's pretty nice. And iOS 10 drops on 9/13, it looks like. So just before the podcast recorded, I went in and was installing the Gold Master through the developer program, and I bricked both my iPhone and iPad. And it turns out it's because I'm a dummy who did not really read the release notes. It said you needed Xcode 8 Gold Master installed before you did it. So, you know, that's on me. I installed it just before we started recording, and I've had my iOS 10 upgrades going in the background as we've been doing this, and watchOS 3 even is installing right now as we speak, and everything's groovy. So that's going to be kind of nice when that's done. This is the first time I haven't installed a beta during the program, but when you get to Gold Master, it's fine. You can go ahead and do it then at that point, I think.
I got both my iPad and iPhone upgraded to the Gold Master this afternoon, no problems, but with both of those, because I was already on the betas, so I just did the over-the-air upgrades for both, and my watch is saying that it's fine, so it didn't want to upgrade at all, so I don't know, so I might need to check on that, but phone and iPad upgraded just fine, and actually downloaded the Gold Master for macOS Sierra as well this afternoon, but I was waiting to after we recorded the podcast to make sure I didn't brick my Mac installing that.
good plan. Well, see, the thing is, you're on the public betas, though. You weren't on the developer beta. So.
No, I was on the dev betas. I was on the dev betas this whole time. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I joined the dev program right after the keynote. I'd been part of it before and let it expire. So, yeah, I went back on the dev program and have been putting those betas on my devices. So.
Ah, okay. So that makes a lot more sense to me. I'm like, how did he do that? Unless he was torrenting it or something. This doesn't make any sense because I knew you'd been on the public betas all summer. So for the watch beta, you have to install that profile through the developer center, and it restarts the watch, and you go into software update in the Apple Watch app, and then it'll be advertised to you. So of course that takes forever and a day to download the 2 gigs over Bluetooth to the watch, but.
Yeah, no, I never did the public betas this time around. It was all dev, so I had rejoined the dev program. So, yep.
Oh, okay. I didn't. I don't ever do the watch one because if it messes up, you end up bricking your watch and have to send it back to Apple. But again, I figure Gold Master, it's worth taking the risk on that one. So we're getting close to time here. I think one of the things that the last thing that I had that I wanted to discuss was the. Completely no mention of this, but people noticed the iPad pricing also got altered today. So the 256 gig model is now $100 cheaper, and it's I guess for the Wi-Fi it's $999 versus $1099, and the 128 gig is $50 cheaper. So I guess that's probably because new iPad Pros are going to be imminent, but it is kind of nice they changed that. We didn't get any Apple TV news today. We didn't get any Mac. New Mac, long overdue Mac upgrade news today. I guess that'll be October. Was there anything that you guys wanted to see today that you didn't get?
I didn't see anything I didn't want to get. I think the main thing I wanted to see for a definite yes was the stereo speakers on the iPhone, and they delivered.
I think the rumors of the metallic blue kind of had me excited for that, but I'm fine with the two black options. Otherwise, yeah, I don't think there was anything that I was really looking forward to that that we're missing. I mean, we got the stereo speakers, like Brad said, we got the dongle included. We got bigger base size and 256 for the previous 128 prices. I mean, I everything's there now. Just let me have it today.
Yeah, you know, we sort of glossed over the speakers. I guess there's one at the top, one at the bottom, and it's really designed to work best in the landscape orientation. So when you're watching a movie or a TV show, you really get the benefit of it. Of course, that seems kind of smart. You know, when you're on the iPad, I'd never noticed they have the dual speakers. Now they have stereo. It sounds great. I know it sounds louder, but I'm glad to see that that included in the phone. I wanted to say that I also saw that they were able to do more on the A10, and it drew like 2/3 of the power. I think I made a note of that. Yeah, there we go. For the 6-core graphics, it's 50% faster than it was last year and draws 2/3 of the power that that it did last year. So I think as they continue to make these improvements at the hardware and software level to do more with less, I think that's really a beneficial thing. It doesn't get enough coverage, and I'm really glad they did it. But I don't think there was really anything that I was expecting to see that I didn't. I think all of the secrets had leaked ahead of time, and just delivering what we expected they would was good enough for me.
Well, the fact that they're saying, you know, 66% power draw, maybe they really will be able to pull off the 14-15 hour battery life.
Yeah, we'll give that a good test with Pokemon Go right off the bat. We'll see.
I do wonder if they're going to be able to integrate a lot of the going forward, a lot of the low power mode optimizations they do to, you know, make it back into the non power saving mode features of the OS. I really hope that is something they're working on, since they do want to get thinner and they want to keep things, you know, they don't seem to say, hey, it normally lasts longer. Normally they set a metric and then make it thinner and still achieve that metric. So there's going to be some point where they can't do it, but man, I hope they, through either software or hardware hacks, they figure out how to increase that if they're not focused on making it go up just from a thicker battery. Well, it would appear that Geek Christmas is over. So Santa Tim brought us everything that we were looking for, and I guess that's it for this week. You guys have anything else?
That's it for me.
Great episode, fellas. Can't wait till we get our pre-orders in later this week, and then next week we can talk about that a little, talk about a little more details as they start coming out, and then we get our phones next week.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see more of the secret stuff come along in the next couple of days.
Are we going to be messaging at 3 a.m. Eastern, 2 a.m. Central when we start to do our pre-orders, or are we just going to do it and just silently slog back to bed?
I'll probably be doing it on my iPad Pro in the bed, because it always seems to work better through the App Store app than it does through the website. So I'll be doing it through the app.
You'll probably hear from me.
I totally agree. If you do it through the website, you're a sucker, man. You have to use the Apple Store app. It works flawlessly every time, though if you have a business account on AT&T, I've had experiences that it doesn't go quite as well.
We'll see. We'll see. I've got a couple things up my sleeve. I've got to go figure out what I'm going to do. All right, I've got dogs whining at me here. I think I've got to wrap up.
May the odds be ever in your favor, Jim, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Later.
Tonight.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. We can be found on Twitter. I'm at Brian B. That's B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's B-I-G-J-I-M. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.